Yeah, welcome to the motherfucking Soulcast. Today's guest is my good friend Alfredo from Occupied Southwest Distro. Occupied Southwest Distro is, you guessed it, a zine distro which originally got started in Phoenix, and they've sort of federated and got people doing shit all over the country. But this conversation isn't so much about that. This conversation is me and a fellow traveler in anarchy world talking about the book Desert. If you've never read the book Desert, check it out. We're going to talk about how the book has sort of been an intervention in our thinking. And we thought it was important to have this conversation because, you know, there's a lot of talking and thinking about autonomy and building the commune and what anarchist practices look like in the Anthropocene, to put it in those terms. And what I like about this book is its sober assessment of the material conditions that we find ourselves in. And from that, it offers a ton of like suggestions and ways of framing and thinking the situation that we find ourselves in, and what the future looks like as deserts spread and cold deserts thaw, as state power wanes and authoritarian strains grow. And so yeah, this is a great conversation. And you know, one thing I will say before it gets started is like, A, I've never really done a conversation with a homie just talking about a book. So much love to Alfredo for being down to do this. But this book often gets called nihilist, and we're going to talk about that in this conversation. In my opinion, covering your ass is not nihilist. Like, knowing, like, sticking your finger in the air, knowing which way the wind is blowing is not nihilist. It's not saying don't fight back, organize, you know, do all that shit. But think about it within the framework of, like, the timetables that the earth has set on us, and what does that mean in our daily lives? That's the main question here. Anyway, we get into all this in the podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you think there's like important shit in this podcast or in this book that we left out, I'd love to hear like what you think we missed, because we might do a follow-up conversation about this as well. So yeah, let us know, what do you think we got wrong? What did we get right? And, yeah, as usual, if you want to support this podcast and help the Soulcast do even bigger things in 2020, which I'm definitely going to do, then go on the Patreon, go to patreon.com/SOLEONE, and you can sign up for the Patreon, $5 a month, support the motherfucking Soulcast, get free music every month. Well, it's not free. Nothing is free, but you know what? Fuck what's free and what's not. Like, this is why we must destitute the economy. We must push capitalism out of our lives, the way it governs our time, the way we even think about time when we're alone. Fuck that. Anyway, Soulcast, proud member of the Channel Zero Podcast Network. And if you want to check this book out, go to readdesert.org. And before we get into it, though, let's hear from some homies in the Channel Zero Podcast Network.
In the eyes of the government, we are the enemy.
In a world where there is no government, anarchy rules. This summer, get ready for the most action-packed podcast.
We continue fighting because we hate all authority and love freedom, which cannot be given, but must be taken.
Such zines as This Is Not a Dialogue, A Crime Called Freedom, Party's Over, and many, many more.
For more text and audio material of interest to anarchists,
check out ResonanceAudioDistro.org.
All right, Alfredo, welcome to the motherfucking Soulcast.
Thank you. You know what? They've tuned in to hear that the distro has died and been buried, yet they find us alive and well.
Yeah, are you talking about Occupied Southwest Distro?
Yeah, I'm just kind of being silly, whatever. But...
I know. Yeah, I was trying to tag y'all on there, and I couldn't find it on Twitter. I was like, all right.
Yeah, for real. I mean, we don't have a Twitter account anymore, which I think was a big part of the project in a sense. But you know what? I just feel like anytime social media becomes a big part of your project, you gotta rethink what you're doing or whatever. I don't know. It's just at a point we just didn't want to be on the internet so much anymore.
Yeah, I don't blame you, especially because the project is about, you know, being in physical space with people and getting them to read things as opposed to, like, you know, trying to be cute on Twitter.
Talking to other anarchists on Twitter.
Or, like, you know, or just people who just don't give a fuck and are just talking hella shit, you know?
Engaging in the discourse, right, yeah.
Well, anyway, I liked your Twitter account because I thought it was unpretentious and, like, lighthearted, and I felt like that sort of embodied what, I don't know. Sometimes actual projects are just so serious, you know?
Yeah, totally. You know what? If I end up in a space where I'm, like, really feel like I have to, like, toe a certain line or, you know, just not say stuff when I really disagree with something, I don't want to be in those spaces again. You know, I've done that before, learned my lesson, and you know what? We just don't care. Just don't care anymore.
Life's too short. Well, so...
There's no reason.
So you and I, we've known each other for, you know, a long time. I don't know how long, you know, whatever. Let the fucking NSA overlords figure out how long we've known each other. But, yeah, and so, you know, we've been kind of co-travelers as far as, like, the evolution of our politics from, like, Marxism to anarchism, you know, to... you know, through all these various waves of resistance over the past 10 years and kind of, you know, have a similar analysis and approach, engaged in slightly different projects over the years. But, you know, one of the projects you're doing now or was doing was Occupied Southwest Distro, which, you know, you're just propagandizing, et cetera. And, but y'all also, like, kind of federated and you started, like, I mean, I thought what y'all did just with the zine distro was pretty fucking amazing.
You know, just talking about, like, the evolution of my politics over the years, I mean, it was something really just born out of that, to be honest with you. Like, there's just a lot of ways I could describe it, but one of the things that I definitely have thought about a lot of, like, projects and, like, people I've been around and, you know, just, like, engaging with the anarchist milieu, I was just like, man, you guys need to fucking read. Like, you know, you ever just be sitting there at, like, a meeting or you're at some, like, protest or rally or whatever and you just hear the people up there talking and you're like, god damn, you need to read a book, you know, you need to read Desert.
Yeah.
Right. You need to read Desert talking about the global revolution's gonna come and we just gotta get all the fucking workers on the right page, or like we need to just build these, like, you know, autonomous communities, whatever. I don't know. That's something I really fell for a period of time. But so I kind of thought about ways that I could still, like, engage with anarchist practice or whatever and not really, like, have to talk to that many people, like, not have to, like, run ideas through people, you know, like, through, like, a really rigid collective, or be engaging, like, with this milieu. And just the way that we kind of figured out to do it was through, like, just bypassing that altogether and bringing our message just directly to people, you know what I mean? Just rather than, like, talking to other anarchists and whatever and giving zines to the same people every night who just, like, kind of stack that shit on their bookshelf and, like, never look at it or whatever. What we could do was just go out to, like, wherever we knew there was going to be a large amount of people and then talk to those people and give them give them our material. And what you do, what you find out when you do that stuff, like straight up, what you find out is there is a lot of support for anarchist ideas. There's a lot of it. You know, it's just not the places that we're looking at. But like every time we would go out and we would table, you know, if we bring like 300, 400, 500 zines and like some hundreds of posters, we would be completely empty by the end of the night. And it wasn't people that were these like punks or, I mean, there were some of them and they're cool, but there wasn't like people like that who were taking the materials. It was just like all kinds of different people from like all walks of life who were like interested in talking to us about things. And you realize that stuff is really on the tip of people's tongue, sorry, the tip of people's tongues, you know? And I felt like that was really cool and really inspiring and really empowering to engage in something like that. And then, you know, we just wanted to more like something that's been really important to me in my politics is bringing anarchism like into the real world. You know what I mean? Just like taking it off of the internet, taking it out of this milieu and doing things that are going to actually spread these ideas like amongst the population or whatever. So what we did was we just networked and engaged with other comrades in other places that wanted to, that also had that same like ethic. And yeah, I mean, we just helped them to get their distro started and we got a good little network going. You know, I mean, these networks, they still exist. I think a lot of us decided to like desert the internet, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, we that's kind of what we did, and we're still out here.
That's, I mean, that's a great segue into like talking about this book in general. But with that in mind, what I wanted to do was read a little bit from the foreword before we like got into talking about the book, because I feel like these few paragraphs just fucking hit me in the gut when I first read them, and I feel like for people who, you know, have not read this book, I'm just going to read like what this book is about, and you know, then we'll talk about it more in depth and why we think it's important. But all right, so the foreword says, and no one really knows exactly, I mean, some people know who wrote this, but this is written anonymously. Something haunts many activists, anarchists, environmentalists, many of my friends. It haunted me. Much of our subcultures tell us it's not there, that we can't see it, hear it. Our best wishes for the world tell us not to see it, but for many, despite their best efforts, carrying on with the normal activism, the movement building, living both according to and as an expression of their ethics, despite all this, the specter gains form. The faint image grows more solid, more unavoidable, until the ghost is staring one in the face. And like many monsters of past tales, when its gaze is met, people freeze, become unable to move, give up hope, become disillusioned and inactive. This malaise, freezing, not only slows activist workload, but I've seen it affect every facet of many of my friends' lives. The specter that many try not to see is a simple realization. The world will not be saved. Global anarchist revolution is not going to happen. Global climate change is now unstoppable. We are not going to see the worldwide end to civilization, capitalism, patriarchy, authority. It's not going to happen anytime soon. It's unlikely to happen ever. The world will not be saved, quote unquote, not by activists, not by mass movements, not by charities, and not by an insurgent global proletariat. The world will not be saved. This realization hurts people. They don't want it to be true, but it probably is. These realizations, this abandonment of illusions, should not become disabling. Yet if one believes that it's all or nothing, then there is a problem. Many friends have dropped out of the movement, whilst others have remained in old patterns, but with a sadness and cynicism, which signals a feeling of futility. Some hover around scenes critiquing it all, but living and fighting little. The hope of a big happy ending hurts people, sets the stage for the pain felt when they become disillusioned, because truly, Who amongst us now really believes? How many have been burnt up by the effort needed to reconcile a fundamentally religious faith in the positive transformation of the world with the reality of life all around us? Yet to be disillusioned with global revolution, with our capacity to stop climate change, should not alter our anarchist nature or the love of nature as we feel as anarchists. There are many possibilities for liberty and wildness still. What are some of these possibilities and how can we live them? What would it mean to be an anarchist, an environmentalist, when global revolution and worldwide social eco-sustainability are not the aim? What objectives, what plans, what lives, what adventures are there when the illusions are set aside and we walk into the world not disabled by disillusionment, but unburdened by it?
Yeah, it really hits hard, doesn't it? Really hits hard. I would say that that's pretty much everything playing out in my mind these days, you know, in the year 2019, like just staring down I don't want to say the apocalypse. I mean, this book gets into that, the idea of like apocalyptic thinking, but just staring down this future of like, man, it's not good now and it's probably just only going to get worse. And, you know, I feel like a lot of the things I see around me are just like, it's like, you guys, look, those, you know, like the DSA or whatever, like, guys, I know you mean well, but that ain't gonna work.
Yep. Y'all are cool. Work. Y'all are cool. You know,
yeah. Some of them.
I know, I'm just being nice. Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing to think about, like, you know, reading that, first of all, I feel like I hear like three different versions of myself at least called out in that first
same.
And I'm like, oh shit, man, like, you fucking know me, like, obviously this person's, you know, like this shit ain't new. But like all the stuff about burnout, bitter, it's like, yeah, I bet, you know, people have been through all those phases. But what's crazy to me is that this book was written, you know, what, it came out in like 2009, 2010 or something. That means it was written before that. And, you know, people were not talking about climate change the way they are now. And kind of what's on everyone's, you know, what's on everyone's lips as far as anarchists, anti-authoritarian communists, people who are, you know, talking about autonomy, and even a lot of other types of people, is like this sort of thinking of a lot of this book has just been absorbed. I feel like this book ossified a lot of talk that was in the air in their world, but then it's also, I feel like these thoughts have also been absorbed by like the broader radical world of anti-authoritarians, but not but this is like the most explicit laying out of this vision that I've seen personally.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's even pretty interesting to see how the, you know, I felt like there was like a lot of air of like hope, and like, I guess the next part gets into like kind of the religious mythology of it all. There was like a lot more of that like 10 years ago, and then now you're kind of seeing like more efforts and a lot more energy being like focused into like disaster relief, or even like the idea coming out of like the inhabitants of like, you know, there will be zones that could be inhabited and government forms of life are going to take hold there, and kind of thinking like on that level, like you really, yeah, you see like those things didn't happen 10 years ago. That wasn't the discourse, you know? And, I also do think, yeah, this book probably helped to kind of shift a lot of the thinking going on.
One thing I also like about this book is that, you know, it gets accused of being called nihilist. And when I've told people I like this book, they're like, oh, you're a nihilist. And it's even like classified as nihilism. But it's, to me, it doesn't, I don't find it to be nihilistic at all. I feel like if anything, it's just saying like, look, like, your global revolution might not pan out. Here's some other shit to think about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what that word means to a lot of people these days. I hear the same thing too, and I'm not sure. I don't know what they mean. You know what I mean? Like, what does nihilism even mean to somebody, like, saying stuff like that? Because if it means that like, I mean, I feel like coming out of like Marxism and still being really like, you know, kind of interested in like really nerdy Marxist kind of shit, like all that shit meant to me was just like the rigorous analysis of what I saw around me and like what kind of situations could end up playing out in there, like what are the potentials for like global revolution in that, right? And I feel like just staying true to that, I mean, it really brings me to these conclusions, like the same conclusions that Desert comes to, like, of, you know, this isn't like 100 years ago. Things are not going to play out like some great proletarian revolution or some like anarchist, probably not an anarchist future. And even if there was one, it probably wouldn't even call itself that. You know what I mean? Even if there was some type of thing. So I do hear that a lot too, but I just don't know. I mean, damn, how could you read climate science or like kind of look at this like authoritarian turn around the world and just think about like how much more intense it's going to become in the next like 20 years, 10, 20 years, whatever, and draw any other conclusion. You know what I mean? Like, you can still be a revolutionary and acknowledge climate change and acknowledge like the vast damage that we've done to the earth and the vast like problems that we're really unlikely to overcome. You know, so, yeah, I mean, I guess whatever. The whole point is I hear that too, but I don't know why people call it that. I think that it's kind of like, it's silly. It's just silly to me. And a lot of the people who say that stuff, they've honestly never read Desert. So I don't know, like.
Well, you know, I had to reread it, you know, because sometimes, like, when you read something, you can't tell your own thoughts from the book and, like, what you, like, thought when you were thinking the book. You know what I mean? And, like, that's
yeah.
In general, that's pretty much what we're doing with this conversation anyway. But so it's like, I do not necessarily know, like, how to, like, you know, divorce all those things. But when I first read it, I did kind of have this nihilistic vibe. But then when, like, I reread it, I realized, like, no, wait, what this person's saying is, like, what you're doing is like hopeless and nihilistic, and that's why it doesn't sit right in your gut. You know, that's why like everyone's burning out and no one is invested in any of the projects around you, because at the end of the day, like, it's not, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but like people recognize that, like, you know, when they're so, you know, so precarious in this world that like it might feel like like everybody needs to be here on this day for this fucking day of action. I gotta make it where I'm living out here in Brunswick, Maine. We gotta throw down hard to be in solidarity with everything that else is happening, you know. And that's that like anarchist firefighter. Like every next thing is like, you know, has to be the most important. And you know, because of this holy idea that like we're building class consciousness, we're sticking our fingers in the ruptures and spreading them, and like, yeah, it's like, of course we should all be doing that shit anyway, because that shit's fun, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't do stuff because I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? We're gonna like destroying in Phoenix or whatever. Like, we're gonna raise the class consciousness of the people in Phoenix, and they're gonna like revolt or whatever, and we're gonna have like the Phoenix commune or whatever. So I don't do it because of that. I do it because like, well, you know what? I really don't like this type of life that's been imposed upon me, and so I'm gonna try to do what I can back. You know what I mean? Like, that has nothing to do with like these leftist like revolutionary aspirations. It's just like, we might as well, you guys. I mean, fuck, what else is there to do? What else is there to do? Really?
And so, like, you know, this holy idea of like revolution, you know, of that if we just contribute to the moment, then, you know, we did our part, and then magically it's going to, all these things that we're doing, everyone all over the world will magically like produce this, you know, utopia or something. Like, I know that's like kind of throwing up a straw person, and people don't really believe that. Oh, okay. So what they're offering is like a framework to look at, like how to analyze your interventions, how to analyze your analysis. They're like, okay, well, so if the problem is this big and it's this huge, and if you believe like the authors of this, that like nothing we do is going to magically create this utopia, then you can choose your interventions based on how will they have the most impact, how they most deeply reflect your values. And so it like provides this whole like rationale and analysis and strategic, like a level of strategic, deep strategic thinking. And so I feel like for people who think that this book is nihilist and isn't offering something, I would argue the opposite. I would argue that it's about as close as you can get to like someone laying out like the outline of a platform for, you know, people who want to look at a book and it's like, oh, Marx will tell me everything. It's like, well, here's some people who didn't even want to put their name on some shit that wanted to share a lot of information with a lot of people. And so I feel like...
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I know that there's a lot of people out there, and I felt this way too, you know, with some of the projects that I've been involved in and some of the things that I've done, like, of just like spinning your wheels or like just not getting to the point. Like, it always felt like, you know, I felt many times that when I was doing projects, like, there's still this feeling of like emptiness. And what I feel like it comes from is just like, I don't feel like I'm getting to the fucking point with these things, you know what I mean? With these efforts I'm doing, like, these could be a lot more focused and a lot more effective by just like, just think about things a little bit more, like kind of come at it from the angle that I think Desert comes at it with, like, what's important, what's interesting or whatever, what's important to me about Desert is that it's kind of, a lot of the reason that I felt that way about my projects is because, like, you know, I don't, like, in Phoenix, I really don't think, like, I guess if there was, like, a successful revolution or, like, something happened there, I mean, what would you even have to do? Like, probably have to get most of the people out of there, to be honest with you. Like, you know, I'm serious. I'm totally serious. So, like, you probably just have to, like, get most of the people to leave because it's just not sustainable. It's not viable for people to live there, right? Like, something I wanted to really hit on is the idea of, like, the situation with the climate, which I think is the most pressing issue for the reason that it's going to foreclose all kinds of possibilities for people. But yeah, it has foreclosed the idea of revolution in some places, you know, that just are not going to viably be able to be inhabited by anybody or in numbers nearly as large as they are now, like Phoenix, right? Which doesn't have a natural water source anywhere really nearby, or all the rivers are dammed up and is running out of water and only getting hotter and is like polluted in every single which way. Like, I don't think that the aim should be to get like 5 million people to continue living there. I think it, you know, like, and then so I think of like what kind of thing do you even aim for there? You know, if you're a revolutionary, if you consider yourself a revolutionary, like, how does that analysis play into like what you're doing? And I feel like on a more like, something I also think about is like on a more like, the more like liberal type of organizing, you know, like the organizing for like healthcare and like tenant housing, unions, things like that, where I feel like those are good effort. Like, I wouldn't want to call anybody who does stuff like that, like, say that they have bad intentions, because I don't think that about them. But at the same time, like, in the same way that civilization, you know, is creating the conditions that are going to foreclose revolutionary potentials in some places, in the same way, like, the neoliberal state has its ways of making sure you don't get the reforms that you are asking for. And it, you know, and I've figured that out through a really, really rigorous, like, study of financial capitalism and neoliberal policies and, you know, getting into that really nerdy, like, semiotext, the people who publish, like, The Coming Insurrection and To Our Friends. They also publish a lot of really, really, really potent stuff. Although it's very dense, stuff about like governing through finance capital, and you really, yeah, you just see, like, you know, even if even if you, like, got Bernie Sanders and all of his homies into the White House, or, like, you took over your city government with, like, a bunch of people from the DSA, like, you know, these banks are just going to come in and, like, not lend you credit anymore, and then it's game over right there, you know what I mean? So, I don't know, I think about, like, those two things, like, in parallel with each other, of just, like, us, we're fighting for this thing that just cannot happen the way that we want it to happen, and is not really, at that point, like, not worth the massive amount of effort we are putting into it, you know, putting into some of these projects and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know, just thinking about tactical engagement and strategic engagement and things. So, yeah, what does it look like? What does it look like to be an anarchist and, you know, organizing in a desert?
Well, you know, we haven't gotten into the language, which is, like, as a poet, right, the stuff that I love about that book. But, like, you know, along the lines of tenant organizing, like, you know, like, that's how you feel, like, in your heart about tenant organizing. And,
yeah,
like, and, like, you know, but, you know, to, like, the anarchist, you know, in New York who, you know, like, if you live in one of those places, it's, like, you know, apartment building or bust. And, like, you want to stay and fight in the city. It makes sense to be engaged in those projects. You know, it's just,
I think,
like,
so too, yeah.
And I mean, at least that's how they put it in the book, as, like, in the damage control section. They're like, look, you know, if you can, you know, do things that reduce suffering, like, you know, do it by all means. Like, do what, like, I think that's, like, one of the diplomatic things I like about the book, because it's not necessarily, like, saying, like, this kind of activism isn't relevant or anything like that. It's just saying, like, given our actions, given the logical historical response to these things, given the unprecedented historical forces of climate change that we're facing, like, you know, let's do the mental, I mean, for me, it's like, let's do the mental exercise of what happens if we don't, if, you know, if climate change is happening so fast that we can't have a global revolution. And, like, no one dares, I've never really seen anyone dare to, like, write that down. You know, it's like sacrilege.
Yeah, I've almost never been a part of... I've almost never seen any serious project try to actually... I mean, I think that there's some kind of today that exists, I guess, maybe. But, yeah, it is, like, sacrilegious to basically be like, we're not organizing for revolution, we're organizing for something else, you know? Or, yeah, some other type of future, which we can't promise you is going to be, like, the greatest thing that ever happened, and we're all going to live in this great utopia. Like, you know, that's, I mean, I feel like at some point, because a lot of the things that I felt more interested in engaging with and learning about in the past couple of years has been more, like, stuff to do with, like, land regeneration, and just things that, like, situate me better, like, in with the earth and, like, with the situation that the earth is going through and is going to experience. You know, I'd rather be situated in that than, like, this revolutionary struggle for, like, a $15 minimum wage or whatever. I don't know.
Right, totally. And you know, another well, it's funny because it's like, I had just stumbled across, I've been, like, trying to find, like, indigenous permaculturists to, like, mm-hmm. to learn, because it's hard to find information on, like, Native American land stewardship, or it's like, I haven't found a lot. I'm sure it's out there. I'm just, like, trying to find, like, and anyway, I was reading something, I forget who wrote it, and she was talking about how, you know, Native Americans were very rigorous about how many trees, or at least in, like, the Northwest, they would only allow, like, 20 certain tribes would only allow, like, 24 trees per acre, you know, and, like, by letting the trees grow out of whack and letting the systems, you know, grow uncontrollably, like, they had stewardship for whatever 20,000 years, and now all of a sudden they don't. And shit's just also, you know, being exacerbated by the fact that, like, we're poor stewards of the land, and the earth is on fire.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Definitely. You know, the desert, I think, well, I don't know if you want to talk about the part where, you know, they're referring to the earth as, like, a living a living, dynamic, self-managing system, you know what I mean? That kind of goes along with it or whatever. And when we don't treat it as such, and we don't, like, look at the Earth like that, and we're not, you know, we're just treating it terribly, I mean, it's gonna... Yeah, I mean, we're seeing the outcomes of that right now, right, with just massive wildfires and terrible flooding and hurricanes. You know, where I'm at, we just had a really crazy winter storm that just looks like the winds were like 100 miles an hour with like some hurricane kind of thing hitting, but it was like a winter storm instead. So, yeah, I don't know, just thinking about those things. You know, I mean, it certainly is, and it's, I don't know, you don't have to put this in the podcast or whatever, but in a sense, I mean, humans, well, capitalism and capitalist society and the idea of, like, civilization has really wreaked a lot of havoc upon the world, and now it's got a fever, and it's about to make part of the pathogen go away or something. So it kind of, I sometimes think of it that way, and that's very, very dark, I'm just gonna say it as I see it or as I think of it.
Right. Well, I mean, it really reminded me of permaculture. You know, like that's like something I've learned a lot about recently. And all right, buddy, if you're gonna be bouncing all around, you have to go back and play with Mama. Okay. This is serious shit. We're talking about the end of the world that you're about to grow up in. If you can't be mature about it. So anyway, from a permaculture perspective, like the way that they look at the book from like a whole system, and a lot of just the way that they really talked about systems and shit like that, really made me wonder, like, you know, if this person was a permaculturist. But the truth is, it's like in a lot of permaculture shit is this critique of civilization, and like one of the phrases. Like one, like they have like their little maxims or whatever, and one of them is it's within the problem lies the solution, and like another one is like the smallest change for the greatest effect, and I feel like I hear both of those principles a lot in this book. You know, like maximize your efforts, and yeah, and so I just like, and also like, you know, what this book does a lot is it paints this picture of like, you know, the problem we face is massive, and because it's so big, instead of being overwhelmed by that, like, what are the opportunities there? Like, there's an inverse positive of every, like, almost of every, pretty much anything bad can be turned into something good.
In a sense, yeah, for sure. I mean, in a sense, it's liberating. In a way, like, to really remind yourself that, like, you know what, these problems are not going to be, like, solved by me and, like, my collective or my organization alone. And I feel like one of the things of being, like, a quote-unquote organizer, capital O-T-M, is, like, you know, having this idea, like, I've got to, like, sacrifice myself and I've got to, like, burn myself out because these, like, massive problems are coming, and you know, like feeling like you're a superhero and you're gonna save things. And I think that that is really what leads to a lot of like burnout and like jadedness and bitterness, is just like treating things that way. And you know, that's not how things work, and that's not how things have ever worked or whatever. And I think that that perspective, like, just from somebody, you know, I used to be like that, I used to think like that, you know, or I mean, maybe not totally consciously of it, but definitely behaved that way and have felt like anxiety about really needing to intervene. Kind of like the idea of the anarchist firefighter, like you just talked about, right?
You know, you were talking earlier about, you know, global revolution, and like there's a phrase that people keep like talking about, and it's like affect theory. It's like a way a place makes you feel, you know. And you'll know, like, you know, we notice with a lot of like the new texts that are coming out, there's all this like language, you know, talking about life and like, you know, the more holistic parts of being or whatever, because for so long it's been left out of a lot of our activism, you know. And like a lot of my homies would be like, of course all your shit's gonna fail, you know, we're not creating like real communities here. You know, we're not like, you know, before this conversation started, we were talking a little bit about the Maroons. And like when people talk, when I've thought about the Maroons, I didn't think of it as being like, you know, this community that's spread over like whatever, 1,000 square kilometers that lasted for 100 plus years. And like when you talk about like, and those are the historical things that we can point to now. We can say, okay, Chiapas, Rojava, you know, the Maroons, like building autonomy, that makes sense. You know, are we really gonna like, you know, force everyone who works at the Phoenix prison to like read Bakunin, you know, and like join our mutual aid projects, you know, like, So I don't know. I feel like the only way you really can have, in my opinion, like a global revolution, like an actual like revolution that like creates something that people would be happy with, is like massive education, you know? So like zine distros, like all these little things, you know, in my opinion, to me, feel like where I want to put my efforts. I want to put my efforts into education and mutual aid / resistance infrastructure, not so much like chasing moments of the day, but building the sort of intergenerational, you know, long lasting infrastructures that they talk about in here. But even in this book, they're like, don't, you know, that's not like a silver bullet either.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. Like when you look at the nuclei of actual resistance movements, right, that challenged like the expansion, that have the capability of like challenging the expansion of capital, you know, challenging infrastructure in a real way and things like that. It's not these like astroturfed, like invented kind of communities that I feel like a lot of us think of. And I mean, even myself, you know, that was a word I definitely used and abused quite a bit for a period of time. Their
community,
yeah. I mean, communities are not something that can be astroturfed or just created out of thin air, right? I mean, they rely on generations in a lot of cases of relationships and like history and trust that's built between groups of people. And I mean, I think that there are examples of those things existing for sure. You know, I mean, they exist amongst just the pop, like you talk to people, whatever, and they exist amongst the population for sure. They just don't exist in any real sense amongst like radicals. It just doesn't, you know what I mean? It's not with this like kind of subculture model that we find ourselves in or whatever. Maybe, you know, I guess like I felt more, I felt more like potential in what I was doing by just working with people who were just like my friends, you know, and sometimes we didn't exactly just share the same politics forever, but I felt like, I felt a lot more power there, you know what I mean, than trying to just get kind of wrangle everybody into like the same, we're going to all do the same thing, you guys, because at the end of the day, you know, what I do end up being reminded of is that I just genuinely like, or generally just don't want to like hang out with a lot of these people. And it does, you know, that doesn't mean anything. It's just like, I just don't want to, I don't know if you've had that experience or if you felt that way, just talking, just real quick, just talk about like the idea of like community and like what does the nucleus of resistance look like?
Yeah, totally.
Because it's going to be important in the, you know, to resist some of these things or to try to even survive in some of these things coming down the pipeline. It's probably not going to be anarchist militias like taking over swaths of territory, but there might be like, there will be other formations, you know, that do.
Right. Well, I mean, I like along those lines, right? Like I remember during Occupy, my homie Main Rock, who, you know, he's a rapper and he, I don't know, he was like, you know, he like made, you know, police brutality songs. Like he was a homie of mine. Like we did a few activist shows together. And I remember just one day after a show, I was like, man, what's up with this shit? Like, why is this shit so white? And he's like, man, yeah. And he's like, man, look around, dude. He's like, I don't want to hang out with these people. And I was just like, oh shit, that's fucked up, man.
No, I mean, I know what he means. I'm sorry. I know what he means.
But you know, that said, I mean, I've met, like, you know, we all self-select once we get into larger groups and find smaller ones. But that's kind of how I feel also. Like, there's like stuff going on out here that occasionally, like, someone tips me off on. It was like, oh, do you want to go to this? It's like, you know, kind of, but I also kind of really don't. I don't want to do capital A activism. I want to build power and build a base where I'm at and build the kind of things that reflect my values. And like, part of that is like thinking about community, you know? And again, like, this book talks and thinks a lot about, I don't know if it even uses the word community. Like, I like how Scott Crow, when he talks about community, he says there's no such thing as community. There's communities. You know, a white activist walks into the hood and sees the community, but there's actually like 20 different communities, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
And so it's like, and this is like, you know, I always go back to Tarnak, but it's like, you know, when I went there, you know, I saw, you know, people offering, you know, they had their own infrastructure. They had, you know, farms, you know, tons of farmland, land that they were owning, and people were building tiny houses on, you know, one place they're like training people to, you know, to do woodworking stuff. And, you know, they're like, you know, allowing, they've built a structure for Syrian refugees to come down and live in. And I was like, doesn't it, aren't you concerned, you know, about patriarchy or whatever? And they're like, we have to keep our projects dangerously open. You know, like, we have meals at noon and at 6 p.m. and everyone in the city can come. And, you know, like, doesn't matter what you believe. Like, if you live in this town, you eat for free here, kind of shit. And it's like, you know, that's the basis for revolution. Like, you can't expect people to fight together if they share nothing material, you know, if they share nothing in common, you know. And that's why, like, this book is a call to inhabit. This book is a call to inhabit, to fall in love with the place, find a place that you love and defend it and fight for it. You know, and that's, I mean, that to me is how I feel. That's what I want to do. You know, I have been in these moments that feel great. Like, I miss, like, the adrenaline of, like, staring down a riot cop. But in the same way, like, I have to trust that, like, the thoughts that I'm having now are correct. And I have to try to think of new forms of intervention, because the stuff that I've been doing has produced not very much. Certainly not the global revolution.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. We just got to trust that. I mean, these are just developments, right? On, like, this other way. We were just engaging a certain type of way, you know? And this is just the development of it. You know, I mean, things evolve over time, right?
Right. And I mean, again, it's like, a lot of what is talked about in this book is like another good examples of the kind of struggles they talk about in desert are Lazad or Standing Rock or,
yeah.
You know, like Standing Rock was like, I mean, that's what the fuck, that's what's up.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, like, something I think about a lot is, like, you look at the moments of, like, resistance in this country that have really like, taken the step towards insurrection, you know what I mean? And it wasn't, like, 200 people in a black block go and, like, whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, who were the people that did it? Well, the people that lived at, like, the apartment complex in Ferguson, you know what I mean? Who, like, knew each other, right? Like, or the people in Standing Rock, or, the, like, high school kids in, like, Baltimore, you know what I mean? Like, those are the people who are doing the things that we say we want to be doing, right? But it's like, what we're not capable of pulling off. You know, and yeah, these are the networks that are able to do it, and these are the communities or whatever that are able to, I mean, actually, like, defeat the state for a little bit, even, like, in, you know, different areas, whatever.
Well, and again, that gets to another, and again, like, you know, we're just having this, like, conversation about our own experiences and analysis based around this book, but it's like this book touches on all this shit in really great ways, you know? Like, for instance, the whole chapter about anarchists are always minorities, you know?
Right.
And to kind of look at history, like, anarchists have, you know, in a lot of these movements been minorities. And so, like, what, you know, what do you do with that? You know, like, I'm still, like, you know, have critiques of certain, like, whatever, but I love the idea of social insertion. You know, I think it's a great framework for, you know, being the, like, a minority, but it's also like, yeah, we're not gonna, like, you know, we're not gonna walk around with Mao's Red Book and get everybody to, I mean, that's not gonna turn everyone into what those people want it to either, but, like, yeah, understanding that we are the minorities, like, we're not, a lot of times we're not the ones burning cars, you know, or fighting back, you know, and that's,
yeah.
You know, because that's a natural response. When people's fucking, you step on someone's throat for long enough, eventually they fight back.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean about social insertion. I guess for the way I would look at it for myself is like I bring my anarchist politics to the stuff that I do. And, like, you know, rather than this, like, thing of like, okay, well, I'm an anarchist and what we're, and I think a lot of people fall into this trap, right? Like, okay, we're anarchists and we're going to, like, get all the anarchists in a room and we're going to do anarchism or whatever, but, like, rather than that, like, bringing those politics with me to, like, just things that I actually want to do, you know what I mean, like, things that I actually like doing, and kind of, like, finding my allies. Okay, so a good example is, like, I participated or still participate for a long time in, like, an ultras, like, a hooligans kind of ultras firm or group in Phoenix around the soccer team that we have there. And, you know, there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of people in that group who have, like, left-wing politics and, like, radical politics in a lot of ways. And so that's something that I like to use – or not use. I mean, I want to participate in something like that just because I'm really, really, really into soccer culture and things like that. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess I just, you know, help, like, augment the anarchist politics or whatever by just being there and participating and stuff like that and finding allies through that. And it's actually, I would probably say that of all of the different things I've been involved in, of all the groups I've ever been involved in and stuff, though, that definitely is the only one that I felt like has the potential to, like, has the potential to, like, defend itself and, like, people genuinely are engaged in, like, community in a really different sense than anything else I've found before. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. I mean, I have a similar, you know, thought about plants. I mean, I've, you know, went from, like, you know, trying to talk about Foucault and Baudrillard over 2.5-hour conversations to, you know, doing podcasts about fucking plants and shit. You know, it's like,
totally, yeah.
And it's like every time I do something like that, I'm always like, oh my God, am I going to get, like, you know, kicked off the anarchist podcast network? Am I, you know, are people going to be like, what the fuck is this? You know, but, like, people loved it and people love that shit. It's almost like people respond better to my, you know, food autonomy stuff than that. And it's like, and, like, that's, like, to me, that's exciting because it's like, there's so many ways you can go with it. If you're really thinking about autonomy in a place like Maine, which is, like, a historical empire frontier land, which is, like, sparsely populated, so many problems here. Like, there's so many needs for, like, new forms of organizing to meet the needs of, like, what is happening in this fucking weird place that, like, you know, elderly population that's, like, about to go into hospice, you know, like, all the boomers, like, the, you know, it's like the Phil Neal line, you know, we have the luck of being able to wipe the ass of the people who destroyed, of the only employment opportunities is to wipe the asses of the people who destroyed the planet. And, like, I'm not big on collective blame, but I still think it's, like, a funny sentiment. But it's like, there's just so many things about this place. Like, it's cold. that get me excited and why it's important to be a radical in this space is like, because you know what, if anarchists, like if we federate and you get like 20 or 30 anarchist farm projects linked up, like there's a lot you can fucking do with that, you know?
There's a lot you can do with it.
Better,
totally.
And better the fucking leftists than the fucking Nazis. And from that, there's so much more you can do, you know? And like I don't want to like call anybody out or anything, but I recently, you know, did a podcast with someone and some of the stuff that the person was saying was just, it wasn't racist or anything, but it just didn't like sit right with me. And I was like, you know, I'm just not going to put this out because it's like, if I'm an anti-fascist or an anarchist doing food autonomy stuff, then like all the, like that is the number one place to shut down eco-fascist arguments and just rate like casual privilege stuff. You know, like what's the point of being an anarchist if people are just gonna, you know, say fucked up shit that you're
totally, yeah, totally.
It's like, that's why, you know, so it's like, and it's not about being a cop either and telling people like, oh, you can't use this word. So I don't know. Yeah.
No, for sure. I would kind of say something like about Maine and maybe where you're living at, that I feel like this book touched on is that, well, like, going to like a more broader thing, like, right, the state is not like this ever-present thing that governs in the same way in every single area. Like, they're more incentivized to defend obviously like cities of like strategic importance to capital, right? Like Seattle or the Bay Area or like Los Angeles, New York City and things like that, right? So there's a lot more potential to actually really be able to create like new forms of life and other kind of like alternatives in areas that are like, you know, that the state isn't governing as in the same way that they're governing like those places, right? So, and I think that even to go along with this, if you look at I guess what we're just talking about with like Standing Rock and Baltimore and Ferguson, is that, you know, not all of Baltimore or whatever, but those places are places that the state has basically like not pulled out of, you know, but they're governing very little, and when they do, it's just through like brute force, right? Like, they're not as strategically important to capital as a place like Seattle or whatever would be. And I think that the book talks, or Desert talks about, like, you know, this is gonna, as things kind of just continue, conditions continue to deteriorate, the state is going to more recede in as civilization itself recedes because of like climate disaster. The protection of the state is going to more recede into these like strategic places. And it's going to open up a lot of possibilities in places that are not as strategic to capitalism and the state and governance and things like that, right? But of course, at the same time, I mean, you know, it's, I mean, those places are going to be organized by somebody. It's not like people, like, even, yeah, it's not like people are going to just completely disappear from them, and they're going to be organized by somebody. And if it's not us, you know, it's going to probably be like some 3%er land in, or, you know, a 3%er right wing militia, let's say, you know, or militia pushing populist right wing ideas in a sense. It's going to be some of those people, you know, or straight up Nazis or whatever, eco-fascists, for real eco-fascists, not the people on fucking Twitter talking about climate change, but real eco-fascists, you know. So yeah, that's something I think the book touches on, which is kind of the way I'm strategically thinking about things playing out, you know, in the future, the next 20 years, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, you know, I can drive. I mean, and that's the crazy thing about living in Maine is it's such a hinterland. Like, I drove to Montreal to go to the book the book fair there, and I drove through Maine for about 4 hours through the middle. I didn't see one cop car. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like they're saying in rural areas they're being defunded, like the garbage dump just closed down by my house. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's drying up outside. So it's interesting, you know? And then all the places, I don't know if Desert talks about this, but then all the other, like, I know Hinterland does, like, all these, like, a place like Portland is basically, like, raw material and restaurant and shopping for people who live in Boston. You know, and so like we get turned into like a suburb, and but then also a resource and resource and labor base for Boston. And so they're trying to build like a power. They're trying to put a power corridor that goes from Yankee Nuclear Stadium in Maine all the way to Boston. And so it's like they can offshore a nuclear meltdown from their own fucking energy uses and have it happen in Maine because, hey, we're a surplus population, you know?
Yeah, I think that the way things are going to end up breaking down is like these bubbles of control. And the military even thinks it's going to happen, and Desert goes over this, is like you'll have these like megalopolises or megatropolis, whatever, of like, you know, like these mega regions that pop up, right? Like Southern California is a mega region. If you say Southern California, people know you're talking about the area from like the border, you know, San Diego to Los Angeles, and then like kind of more north to like Ventura, right? And if you're talking about the Bay Area, you know that it's, you're talking about like Oakland, San Jose, Oakland, Silicon Valley, Berkeley, or the East Bay, Silicon Valley, and San Francisco, and things like that. And that those places are just going to end. I mean, you know, that's going to be like where they're going to try to shove the most amount of people into. And those places will just become like these, like these special zones of capital, right? Just heavily policed, heavily surveilled, like probably ruled in part via the use of like outright military force. And yeah, then I mean, you know, people that can't afford to live there, like us or whatever, will just be relegated to the hinterlands, as Phil Neal had put it in that book, which I recommend everybody read. Everybody should read Hinterland.
Yeah,
you want to update your politics to 2019. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, and you know, and again, it's like, you know what, like we don't have crystal balls. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. Like, some Hong Kong shit could pop off here, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, 10 years from now, everybody's like, you know, ready. You know, great. Sign me up. But if not, here's what it looks like, in my opinion, as far as, like, long-term organizing. And another thing I think to point out is, like, where there has been, like, a history of struggle.
Yeah.
Like Montreal has such good infrastructure. Of course they have a memory and of struggle, and people are still struggling there because you have all this multi-generational infrastructure. You have like the places where housing union, like where anarchists own fucking city blocks, you know? I mean, that's crazy. So I don't know, what else is there? Is there like I feel like we've touched on a lot of the themes in the book. I'm wondering, like, is there, you know, what else are we not thinking about?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things. There's a lot to pull out of Desert. I really hope that people, maybe who haven't read it prior, would take the time to really read it and really think about it a lot. One of the things I think is important is, let's see. I mean, how do I even frame this? Really, it's kind of going back to what you were saying a lot earlier about anarchists being minorities. There's a part of the book that says like, you know, there's this libertarian kind of idea of humans that anarchists have, which is like, humans are like inclined to like want to be free and like mutual aid and whatever. And I'm not sure if I share that belief or not. I like to believe that it's true. You know, I really try to approach everything and everybody I meet with the idea that they're not going to try to, like, do harm or whatever. And I think that, for the most part, I've been correct on that. And I don't want to get whatever, I don't want to get into a discussion about human nature. But something it says is, like, if you really look at history, it says thousands of years of authoritarian socialization favor the jackboot. And I think this gets into this idea of, like, the inevitability of struggle. Like, I mean, it starts with, like, Marxist ideology, right, where the Communist Manifesto posits communist revolution and, like, utopia as an inevitability, when it's not, you know. And I think that there's, like, a lot of Western ideology based around this idea, you know, of, like, inevitability to much greater, higher stages. And I really liked that Desert kind of unpacked that, and because I feel like that's, you know, this kind of, like, logic of, like, progress and this logic of, or this idea of, like, progress and this idea of, like, better futures and thing. I mean, it just mirrors like, one of the ideological bases, one of the ideological, like, pillars of capitalism, right, is that, well, if we keep this thing around, it's going to lead to higher and higher standards of living, right? When really, I mean, materially and internally, like, via the soul, I mean, we're way more impoverished now than we probably have ever been, you know. And even if we do have a lot of nice things, right, like I have a smartphone, we have Skype that we're able to talk to each other on, you're in Maine and I'm here in the Northwest, it's still like, you know, we've never been more impoverished as humanity than we are these days, you know. And that's something I like to I think that people talking about, like, the more holistic nature of anarchism, things like that, are more engaging with these days, is just, like, we're not fighting we're fighting against capitalism, we're fighting against the state and, like, the far right and people who would seek to, like, control, you know, smash humanity down, right, into whatever boxes, whatever template they think it fits in, whether that be communist, whether that be fascist, whether that be democracy. But, you know, I feel like personally for myself, I want to believe in a form of life that is full, you know. And I know that those things can exist, I know it's there, because I feel like my whole life I felt like something was missing, you know, just something wasn't there that should be there. And I think that a lot of people can sense that. Sorry, but yeah, I kind of went on a whole thing here, but
no, I mean, I think that's a perfect point. I mean, like, again, like, you know, there's something, you know, I felt when, you know, there's 150 of us, I'm sorry, but in an assembly in Occupy, and then we make a decision to do something, and then we do it, and then we, you know, like, we're all, like, growing and learning and like sharing space, most importantly, sharing space, breaking bread, you know, getting high together, talk, you know, just being in a physical space, like, reinventing the geography of the city, like, that changed so many fucking people fundamentally. And that's why I love, like, you know, when to our friends, I mean, we're going to go all over the place, the wheels are coming off now, but, like, when to our friends wrote that shit about the assemblies, you know, being like, yo, that's not where the power is, there's no more, you know, just as much power in a fucking empty Capitol building, like, the power was in all the little connections every person there made with each other, and all, like, the, like, that authentic feeling of, like, we're outside of the flow of capitalism, we're fighting, we're masters of our own little fucking autonomous world here. And I mean, that wasn't exactly how it played out, but, like, the glimpses of that people felt, it's like that's to me, like, when people talk about how do you turn an insurrection into a riot, into an insurrection or whatever, it's like that fundamental affect piece, I think, is you know, something a lot of people are looking at now. You know, like, I love that there's like study groups all over the country right now, as opposed to assemblies. You know, I love that, like, people are getting together to do specific things, like whether it's mutual aid or armed defense or whatever. But one other thing I'll say is that, like, you know, whether authoritarianism favors the jackboot or not, I don't know enough, really.
Right, same.
To, like, I could look at my babies and, you know, make some fucking observation to prove any point I want to make. So I don't, like, I do know that I've been very disappointed by a lot of people, but I would say that a lot of that has to do with capitalism and what life is like in the I would just blame capitalism for, in you know, how sick our society and civilization is, for how just like fucked up and unreliable a lot of people I find to be. But like,
yeah,
just
one
thing I will say is, like, Bellamy Fitzpatrick, who is a very, you know, linked to a lot of controversial shit, but he writes this Backwoods Journal, which I fucking love. I think it's a great journal. And the main piece in there is, I feel like it's inspired by Desert and its invitation to desertion. And like, one of the points they're making in that book is like that human beings in this period in the United States, you know, he called in this book, is like a slave mentality. And like, when I read that, I was like, fuck, that's a real bad choice of words, but like, not totally wrong either.
Right.
And so that's why, and you know, and that's how you get a vanguard. That's how you get a people who think they know how they're going to, you know what I mean? And then you have that whole cycle repeating again of like, oh, this is the proper way to do it. You got to do, you know? And so what, again, circling back around, I feel like this is the third, this poses a whole bunch of third ways of thinking about this stuff. And like, I don't know, I feel like I'm, you know, I'm betting on the third way. I mean, I'm still down to, you know, whatever, block up and whatever, but I don't really, like, I don't know.
But I just know that for myself, the moments of power that I felt, you know, very, very few of them, whatever, relative to the rest of my life, of course, but the moments of power I felt have not been through, like, these collective meetings or, like, through, you know, kind of the brass tacks of, like, getting things organized and, like, just – or being an organizer, period, whatever. But it's, like, those moments where I've, like, seen – I've seen reality break. You know, I've seen, like, the cracks in, like, the reality that's imposed on us. And you realize that – and I've realized that reality is something that can be played with. You know what I mean? Like – it's something that we can grasp the environment around us and turn it into all kinds of things, anything we want. We can turn it into anything we want. You know, and there's been many different ways I've seen that manifest, but like, you know, the one of the things that was the most impactful on me is like in Phoenix, you know, they that city is literally designed for the control of like, for control, you know, it's designed to prevent like riots from breaking out. It's designed so that capital isn't like easy to run up on, you know, there's not like housing near any strategic points or whatever, and everything's really spread out. But the moments I've seen where people have just been like, well, oh, well, you know, and just like gone for it, you know, in those situations. And you're like, man, like this city, this ugly, horrible tan, everything painted tan place can like become this beautiful site of resistance. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Those are the moments that have really made me, that really still to this day, like drive me in doing stuff, because I know what's possible. You know what I mean?
Another world. Well, it's like, you know, the old phrase used to be another world is possible. And now it's maybe other worlds are possible.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to be one big collective world, and it shouldn't be. You know what I mean? There's too much diversity and too many beautiful things that we are capable of creating for us all to try to smash it into one thing. You know what I mean? Think about it like this, right? If you're laying out a nice dinner for your friends, like you can spend all of the time making this one dish really good, or you can tell everybody, hey, bring the one thing that you're really good at making, and then you have this like amazing amazing dinner or whatever. I don't know, just as an example or a metaphor for it, right?
Right, or yeah,
sure,
or,
we've all participated in potlucks.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. It's so funny. We just had a family meal where someone was so stressed out because they cooked all the food, and we're like, "Yo, we would have brought all kinds of shit." Like, I don't know.
Yeah, don't even trip.
Yeah, I said Thanksgiving. Like, fuck it. I have family. They invited me. I have kids. They wanted to run around and play with their cousins. Like, fucking cancel me, motherfuckers.
Don't worry. You know what I say about that stuff happening? Yeah, I mean, I feel like I keep hitting on these same themes or whatever, but the idea, I guess we're going to talk about two of our friends. Like, one of the books that has really influenced me in the past couple of years has been Blessed is the Flame. I don't know if you've read that or not, but it's a book that Little Black Heart publishes.
Okay.
And it's about, like, resistance inside of the concentration camps and the death camps during the Holocaust, and the idea of, like, struggling with no hope of victory, you know what I mean? Where you're put into a situation of pretty much certain death, and what kind of things do you prioritize and what kind of struggles take place inside of that situation? And it kind of juxtaposes this over, you know, this idea, I mean, kind of what we're talking about, like with climate change, like we see the world as it is, it's going to be radically different, and we're going to definitely witness some really horrific things in the future. And there's some places like, yeah, I guess in Phoenix, there's some places that just cannot be rehabilitated, you know what I mean, to the point of being like, of being livable in the way that they are now or whatever. I mean, I wouldn't call that livable, but you know what I mean. So yeah, what is struggle look like in those places? And it just kind of, I mean, something that resonated with me is just like, well, you know, sometimes you just kind of throw down just for the sake of throwing down, you know what I mean? Because you want to have that near life experience, and that itself, is fine. You know, that it's doing it just for that reason is okay. You know, I don't need to, we don't need to have like the whole blueprint for how to move forward just to throw down now, because I mean, you know, through resistance, we can find these like navigational directions or whatever, right? Like, but it's not going to happen until we actually start doing it. I don't know. It's something that.
Well, yeah, it's like learning the road by walking, or you know, it's like learning the road by walking, or you know, sort of insurrectionary theory, which you know says that like one attack inspires more and more and more, and like you know, like, and that's what I love, and again, that's why I like this book, and like you know, I know a lot of comrades, whatever, syndicalists or whatever, listen to this, but it's like I'm not like. Like, we're not, like, shitting on anything. We're just, like, you know.
Yeah,
just following the strength of this argument and, like, saying, like, add this shit to your quiver. You know what I mean? Like, add this thinking to your thinking. And, like, if this doesn't, after being in the organizing for 5-10 years, like, none of this shit feels true to you, hey, you know what? Keep making clever signs, and you know, if that's what feels most impactful, like, hey, you know, again, because we're talking about affect here, we're talking about, you know, what makes people feel alive. You know, like,
yeah,
it's like if the simulation makes you feel alive, like, hey, you know, who am I to
who am I to
black pill you?
Totally. Like, I would probably put my politics like in, you know, I don't exactly identify as any specific tendency, but definitely like on the anti-civ spectrum. But also like I really like that invisible committee kind of stuff, you know what I mean too. But like really for me, I think, and just
I know what you mean, buddy.
No, yeah,
I know
it's great.
What you mean.
It's anyway. Great, and then some of that other stuff, you know, about like building cyborgs, and we're going to take away, be transhumanists or whatever. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, interesting times, man.
I'm just kidding. I don't think that. But, yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if you want to just be rigorous about this stuff and, like, be a revolutionary, you know, you got to collect, like, all the lenses through, like, which to interpret things through. Because something, like, I can't go looking at climate change and you just having, like, a syndicalist kind of view on it of, like, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to, like, organize my factory and we're going to... I mean, what do you do at that point? Really, like, the only thing that, that climate change calls for is degrowth. Like, degrowth of capitalism, degrowth of civilization, and, like, rewilding the planet. You know what I mean? That's really the only thing that would stop it or whatever. So, like, I don't know. I mean, I there are some things I definitely do like to do still interpret through, like, the lens of, like, organized labor and things, just because it's the things that would make sense. But you can't really make sense of the world if you're just looking at it, like, specifically through the lens of production and the lens of, like, the lens of progress, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't work that way. Things are just, I don't know, this is a whole other way of looking at things, you guys. That's what I would say, I guess, to these people. But at the same time, I don't want to, like, say that that stuff is worthless or, like, not, yeah, not good. Like, if you can organize a strike at your workplace, you should do it. You know, you should do it. If you think, if you really want to do that, and that's cool, you know what I mean? Because all these things, it's like the Invisible Committee said, right? Like, a note here resonates with something there, resonates with something there. Like, you know, I do think that that is how things do work, kind of. I don't know, yeah.
Well, again, I think, like, the question goes back to a question of ultimate goals. Like, what are your ultimate goals? If you had asked me what my ultimate goal was in 2011, I would say, I'm a fucking revolutionary. My ultimate goal is to fucking tear down the United States, and I'm just going to be going to General Assemblies for the rest of my life, and, like, you know, we got this. You know?
Yeah, exactly the same.
And like, I don't see it that way anymore.
You know? No, exactly. I know what you mean. I felt that way too, you know, once upon a time. And then I felt another way of, like, okay, well, you know, we should just get all the anarchists together and, like, organize some anarchist thing. And, like, we'll create, like, a rupture that way. And, yeah, I mean, I don't feel like that either, you know? I've definitely saw the limitations of that. And now, I mean, you know, now I'm just a grumpy guy on the internet who, like, comments on people's stuff, like, 10 years younger than me, like, you fucking, you know, creates a weird cult and bullies people with it. That's what I do now. I think that that's probably the highest form of anarchism that could be achieved.
But I get, you know, but I guess what my incomplete thought about ultimate goals is, like, you know, that in 2011, that's how I envisioned, like, revolution. I envisioned it like the movie Braveheart, you know, like, and it's just not, that's not the world we live in, you know? And if you were to ask me now, I'd say it looks like building autonomy. You know, pushing, as I've heard, like, the Inhabit people say, like, push capitalism to the margins of your life, build autonomy, build capacity for resistance, build mutual aid. You know, maybe, you know, maybe we've, you know, we feel like we live, like, I would be content, you know, to feel like we've contributed to the point, contributed to daily life feeling more like it feels if you live near a squat in Europe or in one of these places in the world where you can just go to one of these long-standing institutions and just have a coffee and not have to pay for it and be around people and see spaces that are like common spaces. You know, in Portland, Maine, there's like a giant food forest, a free nursery of 120 trees. Anybody can go there and harvest food. They send out notifications when things are coming into a ripening. It's an education point. Like, these things that can, like, provide multiple functions, like fertile grounds for resistance, education, staying fed, keeping people, like – that's the kind of shit I want to build now. you know? And that, and from that comes the ability to get, you know, to be standing side by side with farmers burning tire barricades in the road, because we all recognize our shared interest in the struggle. And we're not like, you know, it's like a phrase I heard in the tar sands. Like, you want to meet a radical environmentalist, meet a libertarian, a right wing libertarian who's having a pipeline built in their yard, you know?
Yeah, straight up. No, I mean, yeah, totally. I think that one of the activist traps is definitely like, you know, there's no shortage of like things that we fucking hate and things that we want to struggle against, right? Like, we're anti-capitalist, anti-state. Some of us are like anti-civilization, anti, you know, things like that. But I feel like very little is actually put into like building the kinds of lives that we want, you know? And I feel like after kind of engaging that way for a while, until like, you know, now in these days, I'm getting older and stuff, and having to kind of, you know, think about how to like incorporate my politics into the things that I like doing and the kind of life I want to see myself living and the kinds of things that are going to like make me wake up. And I know that, you know, there's nothing I can do right now about the state, you know, there's nothing I can do exactly right now about like my relation to capital. But I think that there are still things we can do to like kind of beautify our lives, right? While we still exist. And, you know, I mean, the climate change, in my opinion, is going to lead to like the recession of civilization in a lot of places. And so like, not totally, it's not going to totally lead to it, but in a lot of places. And so like, what does this like prefiguration of our lives, like along anarchist lines and like hopefully bringing other people into that, what will that look like in the absence of state power? You know, what would that look like in the absence? What are the seeds that we plant today? What are they going to grow into in the absence of those things in some areas? You know, so I try to kind of be more positive a little bit about it and motivate myself like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, like, we're kind of like just going the whole way around with it, but really reminds me of like when I've heard people talk about Walter Benjamin's thoughts on Exodus. I forget, like, just basically like, what if, you know, what if revolution was not an overthrowing, but essentially destituting state power? You know, what if you know, and we were joking about that term earlier, but it's a good fucking word that, you know, if we create our own like self-defense forces, nobody needs cops. You know,
yeah,
we destituted
exactly.
The police. You know, all of a sudden, like, who do people call? You know, like, I know, when shit's fucked up out here, I'll be calling my armed defense comrades. I won't be calling the police. You know.
Yeah, totally. So, and I mean, a lot of people already live in those types of ways, right? Like, a lot of the defense, you know what I mean, like in the hood or whatever, a lot of gangs are the ones that are the people that maintain order, and those things already exist. You know, they just don't exist like in the way that we would necessarily think of, or the way that we would necessarily like them to in some cases. Right. But yeah, I mean, just kind of, I don't know, just to talk about that as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I like to ask people if they have another book, if they have a book to recommend at the end of every podcast. We've dropped a couple books. So I don't know if you have anything else that you've been geeking out on. You know, you run a zine distro. I should hope you've read more than one thing in the last 2 years.
Right now I'm reading this book called The Idea of Progress, An Inquiry into Its Growth and Origin. It's by J.B. Barrie. And it kind of analyzes this idea of progress from like a social perspective, like a political perspective, an artistic perspective, and kind of how it all manifests into this like idea that we're on this like arc that's, you know, going ever more
bending towards justice.
Yeah, bending towards justice, and eventually the arc will go into the sun, probably, or whatever. I don't know, but I'm reading that right now. I picked it up here at the the bookstore. The bookstores in the Northwest are way better than where I'm from in Arizona. So, I found this for a couple bucks. So I've just been kind of looking through it. I would definitely recommend though reading like Hinterland. That book really helps to kind of clarify a lot of things, or maybe not clarify, but just kind of give me like the data behind my arguments in a better way, right? So I'd recommend Hinterland, but honestly these days I'm more so and just like I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I would recommend people, if you want to stay up, like have really good long form interviews and kind of stay up on like what's going on. And that kind of that approaches things, I would say, from like a leftist perspective. This Is Hell is probably my favorite podcast. And there's another one called Popular Front by this guy, an independent journalist named Jake Hanrahan, who covers like irregular warfare. And so a lot of the stuff about it is like, he's talked a lot about like groups like Adam Waffen or groups like ITS, which I know a lot of people is a very touchy thing to talk about these days or whatever. I'm more so listening to things. So I'd recommend This Is Hell, Popular Front, and if people haven't heard It Could Happen Here, which is about the idea of like a second civil war popping off in the United States, which I'm inclined to believe is going to be the case. Then I would really recommend listening to that too.
You know, I had like I was supposed to do a podcast with that guy where we were where basically I just kind of wanted to run like a climate change scenario instead, you know, just because I loved that podcast. That was like my favorite podcast last year.
Oh yeah, it's a great podcast. Robert Evans is the person.
I don't agree that it's going to be a civil war or brought about by Nazis, though. I think it's just going to be a slow withering, like we discussed. If I had a crystal ball.
Yeah, what I kind of think is I'm looking more at like places right now, like Hong Kong and Chile, and places like that, right, where. I just think, and like the Yellow Vests also, I just think that kind of this, ongoing street warfare is just a new feature. It's going to just end up being a new feature of like all states and all societies soon, you know, and people are fed up with it, but there's like, the state is kind of in this place where it's too powerful right now to really like outright defeat it. So I think that it's just going to kind of be these like fires that just never really go out anymore. And just kind of always like burning, even if at a low intensity for periods, right?
Well, let's hope.
That's what I think is going on right now. I think in the second wave.
The what's the phrase? If we burn, you burn too.
If we burn, yeah. What is that? To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
Hunger Games, the Mockingjay.
But that's like one of the graffitis that's been popping up a lot in Hong Kong.
Oh yeah, I remember even in Ferguson.
Just like all the essays about like the nihilism of the Hong Kong revolt is really just about how it's just, yeah, you know, if we burn, you burn with us, like, you know.
Yeah, I get it. I'm pissed off too.
It's crazy. All right, well, I suppose, you know, it's a good point to go on with our Sunday routines, rituals, bad habits.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Believe me. Cool. Yeah, thank you for having me here on the Soulcast. Let's see, I'm trying to think about Occupied Southwest. Like, if people want to kind of connect, you know, some of us are definitely willing to like help people, like just give them the knowledge in like setting up their printing projects. I would definitely recommend it. It's a good it's a good way to be able to really contribute to any type of like thing you want to. You know, if you can do massive amounts of printing for yourself or other people, like, it's a really, really valuable asset to have. So if anybody wants to connect or know how to do that or is interested in that, you can shoot us an email. It's occupied.southwest@protonmail.com.
Yeah, and anybody who's ordered, you know, CDs or products from my store, I've been, you know, Occupied Southwest Distro has been graciously supplying those orders with zines for a long time. So thank you, Alfredo, for, you know, supporting my, you know, humble efforts over here.
Yeah, of course. Of course. We're better together, you know what I mean?
That's right. Like, is that
somebody might get mad at that, but...
Good. All right, homie, I have to piss really bad, so I'm gonna let you go, but you know, thanks again for doing it, and yeah, it'd be fun to do another book sometime. It's like, it's
I will never make a dance song, but you could dance to anything, even the silence that my words bring. Dropping like the apocalypse is burning our city down, because the apocalypse is happening right now. We don't need no fucking candles. This is a visual for everyone, and the candles are these fiery towers surrounding us. Get low in this hellhole. Wanted to die like a goddamn king on a throne, but I die alone. Moans. All I wanna write's a song to sing, to bring back the dead and fix everything. Until that day, I'll remain a complete failure, failure, yeah. All I wanna write's a song to sing, to bring back the dead and fix everything. Until that day, I'll remain a complete failure. Oh, I've stopped writing love songs, but you can call them what you want. You could say every song I sing's a love song, like crass thoughts. You could argue that every one of my songs means fuck the cops, it probably does. But these words were actually written by all of us. And as I belt this bloody prose from the bottom of my guts, I can feel the stomach as I'm swimming up to the top of my throat. And I think that I know that this bitter taste is the fact it's my last, but I hope I'm so broke, broken. With the smoke from burnt buildings choking me, totally corroding my innards so slowly. Woe is me. Will I fall to the bottom of the ocean, buried in moss? Or will I rise up to the high heavenly top, only to jump off? Even if I wanted to be cream of the crop, this work will be tossed and lost with books and dreams in the heat of flames. Underneath the rubble of a final devastating holocaust, nobody's boss and no one's mine. But the day I die, any motherfucker that I wanna come and try, come find me. I'ma keep this pride, my sleeves are rolled up, working every minute for the fake fourth of it. I've shown up, that I told y'all that I'm affiliated with some motherfuckers that can make it really glow up. These lips are sewn shut, we're watching statues crumble down as our heroes lose. The kids just wanna fucking drink more booze, not hear bad news. No one ever make a dance song for the funeral, that is unless you think that this is one. All I wanna write's a song to sing.